Bring a Trailer podcast.
Hello, everybody, and welcome back to the Bring a Trailer podcast. Alex here, joined today by Ken Lingenfelter. Ken, how are you?
I'm doing great, Alex. How are you?
Doing really well. We're thrilled to have you. We really appreciate you making some time. Apologies for having to bail on you for illness last week, but excited to make up for it today.
Yeah, no worries. I'm glad to be sitting here talking to you. That's great.
Well, you're a Bring a Trailer power user. I want to talk about your history with the website. But before we do that, would love to talk to you about your history. I'm sure you get this a lot. You have a famous last name, and you are, in fact, the owner of Lingenfelter Performance Engineering. And you've got a great car collection. We want to dive into all that. But talk to us a little bit about your history with John Lingenfelter, the founder of the famous company, and how you came to be the owner of it.
Well, let me start by adding something else here, too. My dad ran a Fisher Body plant in Euclid, Ohio, years ago. And so, you know, we had Fisher Body General Motors running through the house. And back in those days, General Motors did a really great job keeping their employees very, very, very loyal. And as a result, when I was about 10 years old, I probably owned every Matchbox car or every toy car there probably was available at the time. But my dad took me to an open house up at the tech center at GM. And we got there, got out of the car, and I walked up behind a 63 split window Corvette. And I know it sounds weird, maybe not to some other enthusiasts, but at that moment, I became a Corvette guy for life. It was going to be the topic all the way home. My dad said I couldn't stop yakking about that car. And it made such an impression on me. And frankly, I've got, I think, one of the more beautiful 63 split windows ever built in the collection here. And so I still walk up to that back window, and I still remember that day at 10 years old, looking at that car and getting a big kick out of it.
What's the spec on your car, Ken? And what's the ultimate? Is it a fuel-y four-speed? What do you think, in your expert opinion, is the best?
Yeah, it's a silver fuel-y four-speed in absolute pristine condition. And, my kids are going to have to get rid of that car after I'm gone. I'm never going to sell it. So
how many splits have you owned over the years?
You know, this has been the only one, oddly enough. The thing is that it's just really been a perfect car all along. We've got just about 175 cars in the collection right now. The center room is all Corvettes, and it's kind of right in the center. So everybody can, I'll bore everybody with my story, just like I told you, but everybody can get a kick out of a 10-year-old, you know, absolutely going bananas over a 63 split window.
Well, there's still a car that makes a lot of people go nuts. We list them all the time, and people get excited every single time. It's an icon.
Well, yeah, it is, and I watch them as you list them, believe me.
Well, talk to us a little bit about, so your dad was he managed a Fisher Body plant. What was his role there?
Yeah, he was in management at that Fisher Body plant, but had been an employee, actually started on the assembly line. And I think someone at GM realized that he had more on the ball and got him some more education and moved him into management. And from there, that was down in Ohio. And we moved to Michigan when I was probably 11, 12, 13 years old. And my dad continued on with Fisher Body, spent some time with GM overseas. They were building Cadillac Sevilles over there for the Sheikhs and so on and so forth. They shared a plant with Chrysler. And so he was with that. Then he came back and worked for Fisher Body and retired working for Cadillac.
And as a kid, did you get to spend time on the factory floor?
I did, actually. I can't tell you the number of times, either through Boy Scout troops or school things or such, we'd go to the factory and my dad would take us on a tour of the whole factory. And I was also a part of a group, maybe you've heard of, maybe you haven't, called the Craftsman's Guild. And this was a effort on GM to get people interested, or young people interested, in designing and things like that. And I think there were probably about 20 guys in my Craftsman's Guild group. And we'd meet once a week. We'd get a block of wood and we designed a car, and we'd cut the wood and mold it and really basically build the car we designed in a model. And there was always a competition at the end of the year. You know, there was always one car that was the best. I was a part of that program for 2 years. And surprisingly enough, I designed some pretty wild cars. The first one I designed was a three-wheel car. It had one wheel in the front, two in the back. But it was just one more thing that GM did to try and keep people interested in General Motors. And it was a great program. Absolutely great.
And did you have a desire to become an engineer, or did it? What were you entertaining the idea of going to work on cars for a profession as a young man?
You know, very definitely. I mean, it was all about the cars, and no matter what field I ended up with, I was going to be in the car business or racing cars or something. And even early on, I mean, I really thought I was going to be an IndyCar driver. I took some open wheel car training, got pretty good at it. Noticed pretty quickly around that time that I was just missing that thing that keeps those IndyCar drivers and sets them aside from everybody else, that little bit of crazy that I just didn't have. And I'm saying crazy in an enduring way. So,
totally.
Yeah.
These were like circle track cars, like USAC dirt track cars?
Everything. I got an opportunity to spend some time in just about everything. And really, I went back and did some more. The old track up in Wine Country, Sears Point, they used to call it back then. I even took some training later on there and got a real opportunity to enjoy a large, you know, road course track, which was fun. So
a lot of our local BAT employees spend a fair amount of time up at that track. Beautiful track, beautiful country up there.
It's amazing. It really is. But as things would have it, you know, I needed to make a living. And so when I was 16 years old, I went to work for a title insurance company in downtown Detroit. And I'd go to school and then I'd get on a bus and go downtown and work for them. Very good company. Got a great opportunity to learn a lot about the real estate industry. That company was bought out when I was 17, turning 18. And I had learned a lot about the business. And I don't know if I was a little crazy or what, but bold enough. When the company sold, a few guys kind of left and started their own businesses. And that's exactly what I did. When I was 19, I started my own title insurance agency in a real small town outside of Brighton, Michigan. And I started with 3 employees. And it was really a tough time to start a business because interest rates are high and things of that nature. So I really had to dig for resources. And I worked very hard. And over time...
This is 1970s, roughly, Ken? This is
probably when, 78.
Yeah, okay.
Yeah, 1978, Alex. And so
not a great era for cars, so probably an okay time not to be worrying about American cars too much.
Yeah, no, it wasn't, but I was driving a Corvette to and from work every day, so.
Oh, that's not too bad.
Yeah, so, but anyway, I was very fortunate, had very, very good people working for me, started acquiring competitors, and so I started with 3 employees and sold that business in 2003, having several thousand employees in 17 states, and just had an amazing, wonderful career that way. So
that's incredible, Ken. Business still going strong?
Well, the business is. It was sold to a major company. Actually, they're still around. They're called First American. They're one of the biggest in the country. And I've still got a lot of friends over there. But that was quite a while ago, 2003. So
you miss it, or are you happy to be working with cars exclusively now?
You know, I miss the people.
Yeah,
but I'm in my career here. I mean, working with the cars is always what I wanted to do, and I kept doing it during that period of time. I mean, even when I was with in the title company, I was drag racing on the weekends, and really kind of having a good time. Always had a car in the garage I'd be wrenching on or something, and always trying to get the latest and greatest Corvette.
Were you drag racing Corvettes or something different?
I was drag racing Camaros, actually. One real quick story I think is just kind of hilarious is that when I moved to Michigan, we moved to Dearborn, and Dearborn is Ford country. And so as a result, I was the only kid driving a Chevrolet to school. And it was a 69, 396, 375 Camaro. I had lots of horsepower. And as I walked down the halls, there was one guy that had a 302 Boss Mustang. And every time I passed him, he tried to trip me or, you know, hit me or give me, you know, really gave me a hard time about the Chevy. You know, we don't allow Chevys here, blah, 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 blah. And so at one point I grabbed him, we grabbed each other, and we were going to drag race after school. And the school was on a street called Outer Drive, which is no place to drag race, but you know, where there's a will, there's a way. And we, one night, everybody knew we were going to race. Everybody from the school got out on the street. And we hit it, and I smoked him so bad. And yeah, it was embarrassing for him. And at the end, of course, the assistant principal had found out that something was going to go on, and police got there, arrested me. Didn't arrest him. A little weird, you know.
Yeah.
You know, Ford country and such. Got expelled from school, and after a few very intense conversations with my father and with our school, I did get back in after about 5 weeks. But
jeez, Ken.
But anyway, yeah. So it was, of course, you know, this is like late 60s. So my hair was down to the middle of my back. I had a full beard. And it was not pretty.
I'm surprised that law enforcement there took drag racing that seriously. You think kids would be drag racing all over the place in Dearborn?
Well, they were. And we drag raced on Woodward Avenue. We drag raced on Telegraph Road. But this had more to do with the Ford and Chevy
sure.
thing. And then school, you know, too. I mean, it really wasn't the greatest example to set. So,
yeah.
Anyway.
I love a Boss 302, but come on. That he had no chance against the big block, right?
Well, he didn't. I mean, all he had to do was do the math, you know. But, you know, I don't know. We do strange things when we're in our teens, I guess.
We sure do. We sure yep. do. That's an amazing story. Did you keep that car a long time? That's a fantastic car.
Yeah, it is a fantastic car, and I did keep it for quite a while. That's the car I was drag racing on the weekends at the drag strips and such. Really enjoyed it for a long time, but at one point, you know, it just needed something else, and I was really, again, focused on Corvette. So,
did you modify it quite a bit? How serious of a drag car did you end up racing when you were at your peak drag racing?
It was little by little, as I could afford things, you know. In the end, it wasn't a 10-second car or anything like that, or 9-second car, but I'd gone through quite a bit, and I learned along the way too what to do and what not to do. So,
have you softened on Fords? Are there any Fords in your collection, or are you still anti-Ford?
Well, I don't want to say I'm anti-Ford because I do appreciate those guys. I did own a Ford GT. I was on the list to get one, and I did have one. And as soon
that was
as
the original car, Ken, or the second generation?
No. Well, I had the original one in the car collection. The second generation, I got also. And as soon as the 2 years was up, everybody knew I had it, and everybody's after me to buy it. And so I did sell it. There is two Fords in the collection out of 175 cars. There's a Pinto in the back. I bought that because there is a Vega and a Chevette in the back, and I just have a little section of those cars and get teased about them a lot. and then there's a it was a Mercure RX something.
XR4T.
XR4T, yes, yeah.
Uh-huh.
And it's in amazing shape. It's like a perfect car. And
those cars are pretty fun. When I was in high school and I used to drag race in this car, I had a Turbo Coupe, which was that engine, but in a Thunderbird body.
There you go. I remember those cars, yeah.
Yeah, uh-huh.
Yep.
I kind of missed that one. It was probably a pile of crap, but I do miss it.
Well, anyway, but I mean, while I was traveling through the business during the ownership of the title company, I got to drag strips, I got to car auctions, I was getting my car fixed all the time, so.
Mainly in Corvettes, driving Corvettes every day?
Yeah, it's winter in Michigan, so you can't really drive a Corvette very well in Michigan during the winter, but pretty much right up to the last day when I could, and I was back in it as soon as the weather got good enough to do it.
I love C4s and C5s, and I think people are really starting to come around on them. Did you have examples from those generations, and are there particular cars from the 80s or 90s that stand out to you as cars you enjoyed using kind of on a daily basis?
Yeah, the C4, the ZR1 was really, yeah. You know, that was the car to have, and I had a couple of those. But I, you know, I get a chance to talk to lots of Corvette clubs around the country here and there, and I always suggest to people who are just starting out to try a get started with a C5 because that's just a great car. It's a great value today. They still do very well. There's plenty of parts around. That's the challenge with C4s right now. Some of the parts are really hard to find.
Yeah. Yeah. And a lot of those, you know, the ZR1s always strike me as such a good value. And I really, really, really like them. But mm-hmm. from what I've heard, pretty much, you know, a lot of them didn't get driven. And first thing you got to do is replace, you know, everything, all the hoses and vacuum lines under the hood and everything.
Yeah. And the injectors too.
Yeah.
You know, they get clogged up and mm-hmm. so it's a big job. That's for sure.
I love those hard top C5s that aren't the Z06, the fixed roof coupe. I remember, remember when those were first going to come out, they were supposed to be kind of a low cost Stingray with cloth interior and all that. Ended up not quite being that. We had one with, only about 10,000 miles on it on the site recently. A beautiful car. I've always really liked those and always wanted one.
Yeah, I've got one back in the collection. We're very involved in a lot of events and such, and we take it along when we're sponsoring an autocross or something, and I let other people try out autocross in it because it's a perfect car to learn something like that in. It's a white one with black interior and roll-up windows, you know?
Yeah, fantastic.
Yeah, that to me was great, a great value. Those cars are very good.
Yep. That's great. I'm glad to hear you confirm that, Ken, because I think those would be great starter cars too. And like you said, there's lots of them and they're still relatively affordable and they're beautiful too. I mean, I'm just one of the best looking Corvettes of all time.
Yeah, there's plenty of parts. You can supercharge it. You know, I mean, there's so many things you could do with them.
Talk to us. I started out with this and I realized we should have done exactly what we did, which was talk about your background, but talk about the Lingenfelter company that you purchased and your association with John.
So John was an extreme engineer. I mean, he was a master at building engines and a master of finding horsepower in just about anything you gave
and
him.
And he is a relative, right? But a distant relative?
Distant cousin. Yeah, second cousin. And we're all from Pennsylvania, Altoona area and Johnstown area and so on and so forth. We got to know each other just because I was an enthusiast and I ended up buying a couple of cars from him. And of course, story is that anybody knows it. I mean, he had a horrendous crash in Pomona and the car didn't stop, I understand, at the end of the drag strip. And so he laid in a coma for quite a while, just didn't look good for him at all. And he did come out of the coma. And frankly, it looked like they were going to be able to fix some of the things that he needed fixing after a horrendous accident like that. Unfortunately, a mistake was made by an anesthesiologist and he died before he hit the operating table, which was so sad after, you know, recovering like he did from all those major injuries. But John is, he was a one of a kind. A lot of people don't know this, but he drove the sledgehammer that Reeves Callaway had built to the 247 mile an hour mark. He and Reeves were very good friends, as I was with Reeves. And I remember there's a video of him after he did the run. And one of the interviewers said to him, "What did you think about the drive?" And he said, "Well," he said, at about 220 some miles an hour, he said, "the car started to shake violently." And the interviewer says, "Oh my," he said, "what'd you do?" He says, "I just drove through it." And, you know, that's John. You know, he wasn't afraid of anything and just an incredible, incredible engineer. The year he passed, Christmas of 2003, is the same year I sold my real estate related businesses. And John's brother, Charlie, who became a pretty good friend, kind of chased me down and really pushed me, since I was an enthusiast and such and loved drag racing, to take the company over. And so I bought the assets of the company and made sure that we kept John's legacy going. And so that's been my career ever since then.
That's amazing.
Worked out very well. It's almost like one of those things that was meant to be.
Yeah.
It's a much larger business than it was back then. It was just the one shop in Decatur, Indiana. We have a bigger shop up in Wixom, Michigan, along with that Decatur shop now. But we also have some authorized installers around the country that we've been signing up, companies that we feel comfortable with that we can send a kit to and they'll do an installation under Lingenfelter guidelines. And so the company's really expanded a lot since then.
How involved are you right now in the day-to-day running of it?
You know, we've got our, you know, regular staff, CFO and COO and things of that nature, but I'm still pretty involved. And I like it that way. You know, I'm getting to a lot of the shows. We were just down this weekend at my wife and I down at a Corvette show in Pigeon Forge, Tennessee. Corvette show we did. We're very, very focused on charity as well. And this group we've gotten involved with is called Vets for Vets. So they had a big event down there and we spent the whole weekend with them at this great show. I didn't even realize that it's an annual Corvette show and it's one of the best I've ever seen. So it was a good show.
That's amazing. Do you want to talk about that cause a little bit? That sounds like a very noble cause.
Well, I mean, you know, they're very focused on making sure that, you know, vets are getting everything that they need. And there's a lot of veterans that, you know, kind of grew up in the Corvette era, I guess. And so a lot of vets were there with their cars that they'd modified or raced or whatever the case may be. But it's just a very, very good support charity for veterans.
Oh, that's fantastic. I think one of my my colleagues, Rusty Blackwell, was the one who suggested you come on the podcast. I think you know Rusty,
and I
think you support one of his charity causes as well, or at least a charity that he works for too.
Well, you know, Rusty's top shelf. I really enjoy him, and I've used him as a resource many times. He worked with Automobile Magazine, which we were really close with over the years too, and that's how I got to know Rusty. But we do the car collections mission. As I said, is charity work. We just do charity fundraisers here. We did 60 events in 2019. Not every one is a real big one. We all use the facility set up in a way where the center room has got areas for people to do meetings or have gatherings of some kind. And General Motors has used the facility. Bosch has used the facility. Some other companies that want to do team building or something during the day. And, you know, when they arrive, they've got tables set up. They have food brought in. They do their meeting. But they also then, when they have free time, they can walk around and look at the cars and enjoy them. Our biggest fundraiser and our biggest charity we work for is the American Cancer Society. And that is always the recipient of our spring open house, which always happens in April. It'll be April 20th this year.
You deep into planning for that one this year already?
Well, we are, but we've done it often enough that, you know, it's just kind of happens. Our model is people can come, they don't have to buy a ticket. They make a donation at the door in any amount, and then they can come in and see the cars. And we typically have some special attractions. We typically have an Indy car here or two and a simulator and things of that nature, but they're mostly here to see the cars. And the center room is, I think there's something less than 60 Corvettes. Because that's been the focus of my attention over the years, and was John's too. I mean, John would do anything, but GM products were the focus, and Corvette was the favorite.
Do you have quite a few of his cars in your collection?
Yeah, we have some. A lot of people don't know about this, but back in 2002, Motor Trend, as I remember, asked us if we would do one of these exhibition type things where we race the Blue Angels jet team on the quarter mile. And John had built a twin turbo C5, and that car smoked him on the quarter mile. And what was fun about that is we ended up with a relationship with the Blue Angels jet team. And these are a group of the most wonderful people you'd ever want to meet. And right up until COVID, when they would come and fly at one of the local airports, we'd have them up here for a dinner. And, you know, we'd kind of hang out with them, and then we'd be talking cars and everything else. And then they would invite us to watch the air show from their quarters down at the airport, which was extra special, too. So that's one of the more famous cars in the back. But
that's not a bad deal. Young fighter pilots like fast cars, too.
Yeah. No, I mean, the techs were all over the cars. They were underneath them.
Oh, I bet.
Under the hoods and everything else. So
I bet. You mentioned that Motor Trend test, and I vaguely remember that. It was the car was out on the runway with one of the Blue Angels, wasn't
right,
it? Yeah,
exactly.
That's what I thought.
Yeah. This car does 0 to 60 in about 1.6 seconds. And I think we knew we were going to beat them, but you just had to do it, right?
Yeah.
You know, what's fun too is when we have them up here for the dinner, we politely show them the video of the, you know, thing. And it's all in fun. But anyway.
Well, they like those kinds of hijinks too. I like plane guys. They're great.
Oh, they are.
What are some of the other highlights, Ken, in the collection outside of some of the famous Lingenfelter builds?
Well, there are muscle cars because that's the age. I mean, I was a teenager in the late 60s and very early 70s. And so as a result, that was the thing you needed and what everybody wanted. And so there's some muscle cars in the back room. The front room is typically a few exotics. We've got some Ferraris. We have right now we just took delivery on an 812 Competizione Ferrari, which, the Ferraris always get a ton of attention. Mm-hmm. So, and I'm very focused on letting the kids sit in the cars when they come, just kind of fun to watch them eyes get wide open. And we're hoping we're building some future car people, girls and boys. So
important. I love it when people do that. Back when Randy, our founder, had a Gullwing, he would always, pop the doors up, which is, so exciting just to see those doors go up, and kids would always want to climb in, and a lot of people hesitate, and he'd always be, jump in, let the kids crawl around it,
Yeah. I have an Enzo then, and we do that with the Enzo, and we always start the Enzo too, because the noise is another thing that really attracts them.
My two sons, who don't even care about cars that much, they love an Enzo, yeah. Right? It's hard to deny that, even if you're not interested in cars.
Yeah. Well, I've got five kids, and nobody's interested in them. four daughters and a son, and they just think their dad never grew up. So,
my third is 3 years old, and I've got my fingers crossed. It's my last chance, Ken.
I'll cross them for you too.
So, thanks so much.
Yeah. Yep.
I appreciate that. Do you have a 396 69 Camaro? Have you recreated your youth?
No, I haven't. At this point, I'm not sure that I will, but I still got a real passion for that car. And that's one of the things that keeps me going to the Bring a Trailer site. I mean, I'm always watching. And I hit the star button a lot more often, than I really have the means or the ability to buy. But it's fun to follow the cars too as they go. So
you've got a few alerts pouring in every day, huh? We mentioned this before we started recording. You are a really long-term member of the community. It's one of the reasons we wanted to have you on. I looked at your account before we started. It's 10 years old. So you go way back, 2014 from that account. And you've purchased over 30 cars or sold over 30 cars, purchased about 10 or so. How did you find out about BAT in the first place, Ken?
I wish I could remember, but you remember it really didn't start out that way. I mean, it was really Randy going out and seeing cars he liked and just talking about them. And that was just fine with me. I don't know Randy real well, but I knew him from the early days. He probably doesn't even remember me, but the fact that he was looking at cars and I could see he was just a complete enthusiast right to the core like me, drew me to follow him and follow the site. And then when the auction thing started, and it was really a genius idea. It really was. And it seems like it almost kind of grew into it. I don't know if that was his original plan or not, but it sure has turned out well. So,
well, I, like you, Ken, I was just a fan of the, pre-auction website and reading it every day. And I've said this on the podcast before, every time they posted a job, I was like, yeah, I'll apply to that. Right. I kept doing it until they finally hired me. And, and it's been a wild journey. Yeah. A lot of it has been, but none of us thought we were going to end up where we are today, selling, $1.5 billion worth of cars every year. I mean, crazy. But we love seeing accounts like yours, people who've been around for a long time and who've been in since the beginning and especially somebody of your caliber. So, you also have kind of eclectic taste like Randy. So maybe that's one of the other things that drew you to the site too, right? You like a wide variety of different kinds of cars.
Oh, I really do. Yeah. Seriously. And I'm not BSing you here. I start my day with a coffee and Bring a Trailer every day. I don't care if I'm traveling somewhere or whatever the case may be. And I love the other features too. I like seeing the results now.
Yeah.
That's fun. I like seeing, how well certain cars are doing. I'm an addict. I really am. And I love it.
Yeah, 100, that was one of the kind of a surprising kind of nice unexpected benefit is, I do this all the time when I'm kind of a fantasy car buyer. I'm always thinking about some kind of car, and to be able to go and see 150,000 results now almost and see, whatever, almost any kind of car you're interested in, we've got tons of results for them. So to see, what each market for each make and model is doing is really a nice feature to have.
Yeah, I'm actually, there's one I've got my eyes on for Friday. And I mean, I think I'm probably going to buy this car.
What are you watching now?
Yeah, there's a Corvette on there that I really like. And it's a 77. It's very similar to a car that I had back in the day. And I let it go. I shouldn't have. But there was a gentleman there that had to have it. He kept going up and up and up in price. And at some point, you got to be a businessman, right?
Yeah, totally.
So I let it go, and then I shouldn't have. But hey, we'll see how it goes. But in the years where this Corvette is, they weren't the fastest or the coolest or anything else. But, certain cars you just fall in love with. And I, as an enthusiast, you know what I'm talking about.
100%. I can pivot from being interested in there's a 32 Ford right now that I'm oogling. There's also, Chrysler letter cars, and I'm always looking at Porsches and really like early 308 Ferraris with fixed roof. So yeah, I'm all over the place. Right. And one of the best things about BAT is it really lets you fantasize about anything you want.
Oh, it really does. Yeah. I agree with you. Yep. Yep.
Yeah. Just kind of along those same lines, Ken, I'm curious where your brain has been recently, what kinds of cars you've been interested in looking at. Are you all over the place or mainly sticking with Corvettes or sounds like you've got an interest in Ferraris as well, which is a little bit different.
Yeah. I'm one of these guys that fortunately years ago bought a lot of those early Ferraris, and there's a group of us, I believe anyway, they talk about this Ferrari club, but we get an opportunity to buy cars when they first come out. We'll get a phone call and say, hey, this is what we're doing. You want one? And you really can't even get all that much information on it, but you better say yes, because I think if you said no, you'd never get a call again.
Sure.
And so at one point I had in the collection back there an F40, a 50, 280 GTO, Enzo. I was just over the top, and I've sold a few of those cars since then, but they're amazing cars. right now.
How is the 288 GTO? That's always been a favorite of mine, the 288 GTO. I know everyone gets excited about the F40, but the 288 is the one that gets me the most excited.
Yeah, and you're not alone. I mean, a lot of people feel that way, and it was a great car. It really was. I bought it right, and I sold it for a fortune. I mean, it was such a good car. I always had a little trouble with the steering wheel, the position of it. It's so different than what we have in American cars, if you know what I'm saying.
Yeah, it's a little bit like a little more truck or something.
Yeah, a little bit truck driver stuff. But
yeah,
but I get over that quickly enough, and it was just an amazing car. And the Enzo I had too. That was just a spectacular car. Bought it right, and once again sold it for a fortune. It's Ferraris have always been a very, very good investment. But
do you miss any of these cars, Ken? These cars that you talk about selling, is there any of them that you want back?
Yeah, probably. But you know, at my age, you know, you got to think about, you know, what are you going to do with all these cars? Yeah. And you know, I think about it for a little while. But you asked me earlier about what I'm looking at, and I look at old Corvettes. I look at some old Porsches. Ones that I didn't have the wherewithal to buy at some point that really wanted to. And so I'm probably buying those things these days, just to, you know, I don't know, satisfy the fact that I finally did get one. How long I'll keep it, I don't know. But they seem to be the same kinds of cars my friends and the people that I hang with like too. Yeah. And so I had an experience here recently. My wife is the racer in the family now. She races on the weekends with NCCC, and she's doing a lot of autocross, and she's had tremendous success. She was first in the region and fourth nationwide last year.
Wow. What does she race?
Corvette. Corvettes. Okay. Yeah, it's a C8 Corvette.
Of course. Why did I even ask, Ken? I should have known.
but so as a result of that, we're getting out and about quite a bit. And one of her cars is at the new museum down in Georgia, amazing place in Chartersville.
This is a new collection or a new museum that's been put together?
New museum, Savoy. Savoy Museum. Have you heard of it? Or
The name sounds familiar, but what's do they have a particular focus, or what's the kind of ethos of the museum?
Well, they put up different exhibits. And so the one thing that the reason we went down there is my wife's latest race car is a new Z06 Z07. And we've got it all ready and set up. She's only had it on the track about 3 or 4 times now. And so as a result, she's also involved in this WINMA group. It's WINMNA, and it's Women in Racing. And so the Savoy found out that she was doing that along with a number of other people. And so there's an exhibit down there right now for Women in Racing. It's about 8 cars, and her Z06 is one of the cars. And so we were invited down there for last Friday morning to listen and see the documentary of Shirley Muldowney. And such a great event. But this museum is just top shelf. If you got me started, I wouldn't be able to stop talking about it.
Do they have some of her dragsters there? I mean, Shirley Muldowney is incredible, an incredible story.
I have so much respect for her after seeing this program. Actually, I think Wednesday night of this week, they're going to show it on TV for the first time on FS1. But yeah, they had her main dragster, one of her main dragsters there. And she was there along with a lot of other people that were involved. What a great museum, though. But the thing I wanted to mention was that I didn't get a chance to meet the owner, but they have an area where they've got cars that have been acquired, and they've got the ability to stack the cars 3 high. And just about every car were cars that I was, you know, interested in myself. I mean, my taste with the owner of that car is so close and so identical. I just had a ball. We walked through there and got a chance to look at them all. And they're not all Corvettes. They're all over the place. And, you know, that speaks to some of the cars that I have here too. Even some of the Corvettes I've got. I've got friends that look at them and think maybe I needed psychiatric help or something, because you know, they're just oddball things. There's a Phillips back there, and it's one of these big, I don't know, cars that represent an old Mercedes or something, but there's an 81 Chevrolet Corvette underneath it. You know, that's the powertrain and things of that nature. So
anyway. I love that. You've some of the cars you've bought on BAT are a little more pedestrian. You bought a SVX Subaru. I think a is it the supercharged Grand Am? You bought a front-wheel drive Grand Am, I think, if I recall correctly. You bought an SHO Taurus, which is something that I kind of wanted for a long time.
Right.
Those are lovely cars. So your interest spans some of the fancier higher-end cars, Ken, but the other end of the spectrum, too.
Oh, yeah. Like you said, and like I mentioned earlier, there's a Chevette in the collection as well. When I bought that car, my wife really gave me a hard time. She said, what do you want with that? And I said, you know, we're going to park it up in the room of the Ferraris and let's see who walks up, what they do. And it's amazing how many people walked right by the Ferraris and went right to the Chevette. And that had more to do with the fact that everybody had one.
Sure, it's that personal connection.
Yeah, yep. Their grandma had it, or that's the car they used to get to college or while they were in college or something. So it gains a lot of attention. This one's really good. It's only got 4,000 miles on it. And it's absolutely spotless. But still, you know, the whole enthusiasm, the whole idea is cars that you really fell in love with years ago.
Totally. I couldn't agree with you more. That's the stuff that I find myself more and more interested in rather than fantasy cars. What is the driving status on all these? Ken, I presume every car is drivable. Are you do your best to cycle around and drive all these things?
I don't get a chance to drive them much anymore, unfortunately, because I'm running around the country and
sure.
with the business and such. And having said that, though, I mean, we've got a protocol. They're all on chargers. And, you know, you can go that route or you can unplug them and, you know, worry about having to replace batteries. So we choose to keep them all on chargers. They get started on a regular basis. We take them out. We're in kind of an office park here. So we circle the office park with them every fall and every spring, sometimes in the winter. And of late, we've been loaning cars to museums too. We had three cars that we loaned to the Rodeo Museum. We have a car. In fact, I own Zorob Duntoff's mule car. It's a 54 Corvette. A lot of people think it was the first V8 Corvette, and he did 165 miles an hour with a thing at
that's the
Arizona Progress.
Oh, okay, all right, but that's the one with the fairing behind.
Yeah,
the,
exactly.
Yeah, okay. Yeah. Oh, yeah, I know that car.
Yeah, I bought that car years ago, and it's we loaned it to the Corvette Museum. It's down there right now for I don't know a couple of more months. It's been there for quite a while
with Zora's ashes down there, right?
Yeah, you're not kidding. It really, to be honest with you, you know, he was just inducted in the Motorsports Hall of Fame down in Daytona, and we went down for that ceremony and everything else. And I learned a lot about him. What a character!
He's one of my heroes. I like a maverick. Right. So somebody in one of those, I mean, your dad was part of that big, you know, kind of homogenous corporate structure. And so a person who's kind of an outsider shaking the tree a little bit is fascinating to me.
Oh, it's so fascinating. And, mm-hmm. you know, the motor in this car was built by Smokey Unick, you know, and I mean, it's gandered a lot of attention and we've been having a lot of fun with it. It'll be good to get it back here because everybody comes in and wants to see it. And it's been gone here. But loaning the cars to the museums has been fun as well.
And you send cars out to charity events, don't you, too?
We do.
You host a lot at your facility, but you send them out as well, do you not?
Yeah, it depends on what they are. I would never send a Ferrari or something like that. But, you know, there are people who have always wanted a car or something, know I have a certain car. We've participated in that. We've done several memorials for car guys here at the collection. We've done a couple fashion shows. So it's there's all kinds of things that, you know, you can do with a collection like this, and we're enjoying every one of them.
Man, that's fantastic. The possibilities are endless, I suppose.
They really are.
And you've done, Rusty urged me to ask you this. You've done a couple cars that have been written up in a couple places, kind of builds you've participated in. One of them is an electric car, right? The El Camino. I saw a lot of coverage of that car.
Yeah. It's, you know, there's, I'm not really jumped on the electric side of things yet. They're fun to drive and they're a lot of torque and everything else, but it's going to be forced on us. There's no two ways about it. And,
sure.
you know, if I want to see something in the Lingenfelder brand to carry on, there's going to have to be an electric component. And so we were invited by General Motors to help them try. I think their vision has been that the way we'll keep these old muscle cars on the road is swap out the gas motors for electric motors. And this was a great program. Their engineers had done an amazing job on it. The challenge, I think, is that you would never want to sell an engine to an individual who's going to try and go home and put an electric motor in his gas car because they'd probably kill themselves. They're so different from that standpoint. And so we're an authorized installer for General Motors. And what someone will be able to do is buy an electric motor, take it to us. It'd be shipped to us. We would do the install. And it's interesting because they've done an amazing job setting it up where you can just pull that gas motor out and put the electric engine right in, and it connects to everything you need, the old transmission and so on and so forth. And you're back on the road again.
So the idea is it's like a crate motor, but with an exactly. EV swap. Yeah.
Very
fascinating.
Yep. Yeah, it is. And it, you know, I mean, it's going to take a little while, I think, to catch on. What was interesting is when the press release went out that we were doing them, we got a lot of attention from people in Europe. A lot of guys started writing, calling us and saying, hey, well, we'll put our car in a boat and send it to you, because their period of time as to when they've got to be all electric is a little sooner than ours, and a lot sooner than ours, actually. And so as a result, I think these guys are concerned, what am I going to do? I love this car, but I'm not going to be able to drive it. And this is definitely the solution to do it.
Fascinating. So, unlocking a new market, Ken, out on the forefront yet again.
Well, I hope so. We'll see how it all goes. It's funny because, you know, when you have people come through the collection, some people think it's great and they pat me on the back and it's an attaboy. And there are other people look at me like, why are you helping these people do this? We don't want this, you know? And so there's a lot of mixed emotions about it still, but
yeah, like the transition to anything. Right. But to your point, It's coming whether people want it or not. Right.
We have no choice. It's just going to happen. Right.
Yep. And luckily for the, I think long to middle term future, there's plenty of gas cars running around and, plenty of opportunity to drive these cars with big gas motors around on the street.
Yep. Yep.
We've covered a lot of ground here, Ken. I'm wondering if there's anything else you want to talk about, either your current business or your collection, anything big coming up that you want to let folks know about.
Yeah, really. You know, it's just to keep an eye on us. If they're in Michigan, we do a lot of charity fundraisers, as I said, and we try to let people know about it through the Lingenfelder Collection website. And there's an opportunity here to come in and see some things that maybe they've never seen before. And I warn you, like I said, it's mostly GM. I mean, there's very few, you know, other brands here. But that's always been my focus. And other than that, I love spending time with car people. This last weekend, all these Corvette guys that were down at this event for Vets for Vets, we were in our element. My wife loves it as well. We're having a very, very good time. And I find that that's the part of the business I like more than anything else, is hanging out with other enthusiasts and spending time, you know, kind of looking ahead a little bit with, you know, what's the next best thing coming out.
I couldn't agree with you more, Ken. We feel exactly the same at BAT. We got to get you and maybe some of your cars to a Bring a Trailer event, because that's what they're all about, right? Is hanging out with other members of the community.
Yeah, I really would. I'd say one other thing to you too. The new C8 Corvette is such an amazing car. I mean, it's such a good car. I always recommend people get the Z51 suspension, but we're really the only company that's figured out how to get past the engine management system. We've found a way to supercharge that car now. So our supercharged car makes about 710 horsepower. It comes standard with 495 horsepower, which is still pretty good being a mid-engine, and it's a lot of fun to drive that way. We have another variety. We do an intake throttle body headers and exhaust, and that's about 100 more horsepower, and that's one of the other packages that are available. But even right out of the box, without Lingenfelder touching anything, this is such a great car. It was so well thought out by the GM engineers. And you know, you see like the E-Ray that's come out right now. I mean, what a tremendous car that's going to be. And I've got one ordered. I'll tell you, we're up in Michigan here, but I'm going to throw snow tires on it, ride it right through the winter. So I'm looking forward to it.
I love the idea of that. Yeah, of course. Oh, what do you think about that Z06 that your wife is driving?
It's an amazing car as well. But it's a race car that you can drive on the street. And the one she has is a Z07, that's the Z07 package. I've got one that's just Z06 without the Z07 package, and I'm going to try to use that as a daily driver this year. So we'll see how that goes.
How is Lingenfelder Performance feeling about overhead cams, the return of overhead cams to the Corvette?
I'll tell you what, we're excited about anything and everything. You know, I'm fortunate enough to work with a lot of people that are Corvette people here too. And so we're always looking for the next thing to come. So.
Fantastic. Well, really appreciate you doing all this, Ken. And I usually like to end with asking people, what was the last great thing they drove? What was the last vehicle that you were in that really got you excited?
Oh my goodness. I guess Kristen Z06, Z07. It's truly a race car you can drive on the street. I mean, the noise it makes is with that flat plane crank engine. It sounds like a Ferrari, and it's such a huge bang for the buck, which is what Corvette has always been. But we're going to have a lot of fun with that car.
Listen to you, the C8 advocate. I love it, Ken. Any other parting shots before we end?
No, I just, boy, keep Bring a Trailer going. I'll tell you, I suggest it to everybody I know. And I'm glad to say that I mention it. They say, oh, yeah, I'm already on it. Okay, good job. You know, I know they're a real enthusiast when I hear that. So.
Well, it didn't used to be the case, but it's pretty rare these days that we come across somebody who hasn't heard of it. But there's plenty of room to grow. So we appreciate your advocacy, Ken.
Well, I'm anxious to see Randy at some point again, too. Like I said, he's not going to remember me, but I want to pat him on the back myself, because what a ingenious idea, and it's going very, very well. I'm very, very happy for you guys.
Well, we're happy to have you on the platform. We value all of our community members, but you're a longstanding member and somebody who has a lot of clout and who a lot of people love the work that you and your company do. And so we're just glad to have you as a community member, Ken. Yeah. Thanks again for doing this. And we got to get you out to one of these events, man. You can pat Randy on the back and maybe we can talk Corvettes more.
Oh, I'm going to get there at some point. It's just going to work out, Alex. We'll just find one that works and I'm going to be there. That's for sure. So
fantastic.
Yep.
Well, thanks again, Ken. And thank you everybody for listening. Please never hesitate to reach out to podcast@bringatrailer.com with feedback, questions. We always want to hear what people think of the episodes, and we're always open to suggestions as well. So thank you everybody. And we will see you next time.